Very nice, Alan. Very nice. When I spoke to you on June 13th, in what was the closing of the official worship calendar year before summer began for us, I was unknowingly foretelling the future. Here is the scripture I used, Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between regions of kindness. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. As Naomi Nye says, we must first know our sorrow. I thought when I read that to you that we were emerging from a time of great sadness and fear. There had been many dark nights of grinding boredom, deep grief, helpless rage, and fear. I did not know then that we would experience a brief, tantalizing window of respite and then get a renewed onslaught of isolation and loneliness. Being stuck in isolation again is repeating the miserable lack of interaction from the beginning of the pandemic. The relief of a pandemic that lessened in ferocity for a couple of months has been replaced by the surging variants. For some of us, when forced into isolation, the lack of people who recognize us as meaningful human beings in person, and the lack of correction for inflated, fearful, or self-destructive thoughts is emotionally draining. Half of parents noticed a new or worsening mental health condition for their teenagers. And half of all adults report that the pandemic has worsened their stress. If you feel disheartened, you are not alone in that. And the grief. Deaths accelerated like an avalanche. We have never seen so many in such a short period. We will see more. We have literally been flooded with loss. We have never experienced a fearful, raging pandemic coupled with huge losses of membership and infrastructure before. The enormous damage to our building has diverted our focus and energies from moving forward into simply rebuilding. This is unprecedented. That is where we have been. So here we are now. This is an opening of the traditional worship season. In the past, Unitarians in New England used to leave their farms and go to the shore for the summer. If only. However, that pattern is an antique. Your leadership has been working full on during the summer. And I mean full on. And your board hired me as your minister, although I have been your community minister for 25 years. Faced with many decisions all at once, we could pull back. We could pull back our energy, hunker down, and wait to see what happens. That would be at least an understandable response. However, an extraordinary response is to seize this opportunity as freedom to try new ideas. People tend to normally withdraw from innovation when circumstances are rapidly changing and unclear. because they fear they will regret their decisions later. They may fear comparing what they did with what they shoulda, coulda, woulda done. Nobody can do a perfect job under these conditions. However, we can try and fail and learn. I feel energized and fulfilled by being engaged with helping this congregation I love through this time of quarantine and assault. If you are new here, do not dismiss this as merely an in-group conversation. I am speaking to our general suffering from aloneness. Isolated and lonely tend to go together, but are not the same, although isolation often leads to loneliness. Isolation has usually been measured as being without people, and loneliness is not having friends and relatives with whom you can share your deepest hopes and fears and feelings. Few people you see at least once a month, and not participating in groups. You can have all those connections but still feel isolated if that companionship is highly conditional or there are important feelings you must keep secret or you feel painfully left out. During the last year, a few people welcomed isolation as a chance to know themselves better, and I applaud that. But even before the pandemic, a third of Americans over 45 years old felt lonely, and a quarter of those over 65 were socially isolated. Each condition increases the likelihood of premature death from a variety of causes comparable to a 15 cigarette a day habit. Your loneliness can probably only have increased during the pandemic and flood. Honestly, if you want more friends and relatives with whom you feel close, there is no magic answer, except kindness can help. Sometimes we have been lost in canyons of despair, but now we can speak with each other to recognize we strive for more than survival. We strive for the meaning that kindness gives us all. We have right here in collecting together this day, the stubborn hope that if we show up and do the right thing for each other and for others who are still hurting, kindness will bloom. We have waited and watched and worked. We did not give up. We are ready to give and receive. We are ready to join the many counterbalancing acts of staggering generosity and humanity. And I include in that the many people who have contributed to our GoFundMe page. The many acts of generosity and humanity that also live vigorously in the world. The number of hardworking people who showed up and cleaned up last weekend was heartwarming. This is a turning point if we simply affirm our principled commitment to listening, soothing, validating, receiving, and encouraging each other. Now, I began by noting that this is the traditional opening service, and we usually affirm our principles and traditions at this time. Specifically, we hold dear the best principles and traditions for a foundation that lessens loneliness and increases kindness. There are aspects of our foundational beliefs that help us adapt to these particular negative living circumstances. We have principles and traditions, I might add, that are unique, that support conditions for intimacy and adaptation to isolation and loss. Further, intimacy, a close, familiar, and usually affectionate relationship with a person or group, is where feelings are shared and appreciated. This is where being part of a group comes in. But not just any group. Sure, there is the occasional yoga group or knitting circle that is very supportive. But joining a group devoted to a mission or purpose is a more powerful motivating force for good. An overarching set of principles reinforces our personal sense of purpose and provides guidance we carry with us. For example, affirming our first principle, and I will point it out in case you've forgotten that. The inherent worth and dignity of every person is how we push against the brutality and waste, depriving our world of hopeful connections. Experiencing that inherent worth applied to every member of a group is a liberating inclusion of all. This inherent worth is basic for building intimacy. This inherent worth affirms our commitment to democracy and listening to what everyone has to say. Further, committing to the principle of a free and responsible search for truth and meaning counteracts the current polarization and angry depersonalization of our politics and turns us into people who have curiosity. We can be curious about other people's beliefs. If they are abrasive, we can be curious about the bitterness inspiring such vehemence. If we find ourselves more aggressive than compassionate, we can ask ourselves about our hurt and sadness. We can, nearly unique among religions, acknowledge that the fullness of truth may never be discovered, but we will try to move toward it. We can also consult our tradition, drawing on words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Again, we do not limit ourselves to one prophet, Messiah, or spiritual path. Just as no one has a complete grasp of truth, so nobody has a right to exclude searchers with a hunger for truth. Finally, Unitarian Universalism is probably the only religion that explicitly values a tradition of humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science. Contrary to a whole bunch of secular and religious preachers, Unitarian Universalism understands the necessity of masks and vaccinations against COVID. We also heed and respect how some people cannot be vaccinated, and science helps us to work with that too. We heed the results of science and change as soon as new results come in. It is imprecise, frequently shifting, but much safer than otherwise. In conclusion, I remember a controversy within Universalism from about 1830. I wasn't there, but I read about it. Friction between a faction that wanted an immutable list of beliefs to define Universalism forever, and another faction which favored a view that more truth is repeatedly revealed. The static view of truth was represented at a convention, to hash this all out, by someone who demanded, "Where do you stand? Where do you stand?" Which at the time may have seemed rhetorically powerful in implying his opponent was weak, hypocritical, or squishy. However, he must judge the time and context. Society was changing rapidly toward increased equality, and Emerson was recognizing the insights of religions other than Christianity. The response to "Where do you stand?" was, "We do not stand, we move." And so we move forward to different forms of worship, different insights, and different ways of relating to each other. We stand with moving. So be it. This is a time for sharing about the ways in which this service has been meaningful to you. As we did with the candles, we can recognize people here, and we can recognize people who raised their hands in the box on Zoom. And I believe there is a way, if Susan reminds us all, for those who have phoned in, which I do not quite remember.
So we need to start with people in the room.
Let's start with people in the room. Yes, Paul.
Just a very brief comment. Arlen, wonderful, wonderful words. Thank you. I guess I'm very grateful to be here. And I guess your sermon gave me reasons for being grateful to be here. So thank you. And thank you to all of you who are out there on Zoom. Just so you know, we can hear you all very clearly when you speak. And it's good to hear your voices. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Yes, Al.
Yes, just to thank everybody for coming, both virtually and in person. A reminder, because I don't think it made it into the announcements, that this space is actually, believe it or not, wheelchair accessible. It probably takes a motor or a strong person to push it, but there is an entrance to this space that's strictly a pathway around the back of the house, directly into our temporary sanctuary. So that's people shouldn't be dissuaded from coming if that's an issue for you.
Great.
Also, thank you for forgiving me for pilfering all of the precious goods from the sanctuary yesterday in the darkness of night. I sort of expected to see an email going around saying, not only have we been flooded, we've been robbed. But
Alan will be burning at the stake tomorrow.
As long as you give them back if we move somewhere else.
Are we going to have this? Can we have next Sunday here?
Of course.
Because we should announce. I'm sorry.
Of course. Yes. As long as we need it, it's here.
You.
Whatever.
That's great.
Now I'm going to cry. So there's a cap right now of 25 people in the room. So please, if you do want to come, and I heartily encourage 25 people to come next week to the service, but please sign up on the sign up genius list. Don't just show up, because we really have to keep to a limit in order to have social distancing and safe congregation.
If people want to participate listening outdoors, sitting outdoors in the chairs on the lawn, you're welcome to watch it virtually from there, and we'll have the gathering coffee and mixing afterwards outdoors. So that's also a possibility.
Okay. Arlen, there are some people with their hands raised in the Zoom. Okay, let's call on, I think it's Ron.
Yes, thank you very much. I couldn't imagine being anywhere else in Gathering Morning. And it's just a remarkable event to be together. And Arlen, in the close of your wonderful sermon, you say, "We are moving. I don't know if you're being prophetic again, only the future will tell."